This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 4, IDN's Technical and Operations, held on the 5th of October, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, if I could please remind all to state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll hand it back over to our co-chair, Cheryl Langdonor. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Terry. Cheryl Langdonor for the record, and hopefully my audio. Sorry about the minor delay. We had a few scratchy sounds on some of the lines that needed to be fixed. But it's good that we're starting our call for today relatively quickly, and that so many people have joined us. On today's thrill-packed and exciting adventure, we're going to do our normal administrivia and then move into name collisions discussion, which will be a continuation of name collisions discussion, but with some recent material that we would like to discuss with you, followed by a conversation about registry services and, of course, any other business. Regarding any other business, is there any other business that anyone would like to bring up with us now? We will ask again at the end of the call. Not hearing anybody or seeing anyone raise their hand in the Adobe Connect room, I'd like to ask, is there any statements of interest updates that needs to be mentioned in this call? Not hearing anyone raising any statements of interest. Obviously, if the GNSO sees fit to confirm me as a co-leader with Jeff to take over from Avery at the conclusion of the meeting in Abu Dhabi, that will be a change to mine. I guess I'll mention it preemptively in case any of you have missed that news. But I certainly want to thank everyone for the confidence they've shown in me for taking up that administrative role, and assure you all that I will still be in this work track. Don't you worry about that. With that, we're now going to move to what is slide 3. I believe everyone has scroll control. If you can take yourself past the agenda page, and indeed, I think to slide 4, and now we'll start our name collisions conversation. I'm going to hand that over to Rubens for dealing with this particular part of today's topic. And with that, I guess take yourself to slide 5 and let's begin. Over to you, Rubens.
Thank you, Cheryl. So we now can move to slide 5, which is a definition of agenda for this section on name collisions. And what we'll be discussing, the results of the request we made to GDD regarding the reported collisions, and we discuss the effects on that, and that data can bring us into policy decisions, into deciding whether the current round GTLDs should keep any kind of readiness after 3 years of delegation, and whether subsequent procedures GTLDs should have readiness, should not have, and the length of such readiness. What we won't discuss today, we won't discuss the classification of strengths in low risk, aggravated risk, or high risk, which is probably one of the most interesting deliverables we still have to make on Work Track 4, and we won't discuss yet name collisions in legacy and current GTLDs, just not at this call. These are teams for other calls. So we can now go to slide 6, which is basically the same summary that I posted to the list some weeks ago regarding what were the collisions that were reported to ICAM until now. So far, it didn't have any human life threatening main collisions. We only had 37 occurrences reported to ICAM, but of those 37 occurrences, three of those had no additional data. So they were excluded from the analysis because they didn't have any data. It was more likely something that the reporter couldn't categorize. But of those 34 occurrences where we had some specific data, they were about 18, as in 10 plus 8, unique TLDs. Those 18 TLDs were 10 that were regular garden variety TLDs. There were 7 brand or exclusively used TLDs, and 1 TLD was a geographic TLD that also happened to be run by a governmental entity. And this distribution of TLDs had some interesting information. One, that brand or exclusive use TLDs can suffer from this kind of collision. So even though some brands might be globally uniquely known, like Google, for instance, there are some reasons or some scenarios that end up facing brand TLDs with collisions. And the other interesting information is that only one geographic TLD has a reported main collision, which was lower than expected, because one of the scenarios that most people studying the main collision problem described were networks that divided itself into geographies, like the Paris branch of a global company used Paris inside the host name. But in fact, only one of such DOTLD occurrence was reported, which was kind of surprising, but good to know. And as expected by almost everyone, there were no collisions reported within IDN TLDs. We had a median of 3 occurrences per TLD that were represented in this report information. Note that only 18 TLDs have reported, and there were over 1,000 TLDs. So most TLDs actually don't have any reported occurrences at all by a large majority. One other curious thing of this data that although the median of the time between delegation and report the collision was of 22 days, there were some collisions that were reported very, very late. The maximum was 568 days, like almost 2 years after delegation, which suggests that some of these collisions require some other factor to appear, like someone actually registering a colliding domain or someone actually making a network change, and in that network change become exposed to the collision problem, even though it was not before. But that was also very interesting from that information. Of the cases, 23 were reported as service disruption, 9 as networking errors. Also of those 24 occurrences, 21 affected company networks, 7 affected the single local computers, 2 do affect application development environments, which means usually the environment used by a software developer, not a production environment. And one was one web application that was affected by collision. So if you can move now to the next slide, let me see the number, which is slide 7. Of those 34 cases, in 24 of those, the registry was not contacted. And this is information that we recently got back through policy staff of why the registry was not contacted in this case, which are the majority of the reported cases. What could be due to two possibilities. One, that ICANN itself determined that it was not necessary to contact registry since the reporter was able to quickly fix the issue. Or ICANN asked to the reporter if they could share that information and put them in contact with the registry, and the reporter didn't reply back. So ICANN couldn't put them in contact without reporter approval. In the cases that the other cases where the reporter was put in contact with the registry, in 5 they were just in contact. In one instance, the registry decided to stop control interruption to avoid the what that interruption was happening. In one, no action was taken. Although we ask data on outcomes, people usually go away after the problem is solved, so they usually don't go back to tell their stories. But of the 5 known outcomes we know, all was that the network was updated and then the collision issue for those networks were fixed. So this was the overall summary of the information we got from ICANN Technical Services. Before we move on, do people want to discuss some of these results or the conclusions, or people believe that they are actually informed now with the summary? Let me give people a while to think. Seeing no hands, let us move on to the next slide then, which is discussing what we do for the current round new GTLDs, because we have in our charter, this is now slide 8, we have in our charter the mission to define whether the current readiness period, which is a readiness that registries have to respond, within 2 hours, if someone reports a life-threatening main collision, they have to respond within 2 hours for the first 2 years of delegation. And what we have to decide is whether we think this readiness should be extended beyond a 2-year period, which would be a change of current policy, or if you are okay with only be a 2-year readiness as currently foreseen in the framework. So let's try a show of hands and see if we can get all to go in one way or the other. But first we go to Anne. Please, Anne, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Rubens. Just so I'm clear on the question you're asking, is the question whether we should stick with the 2 years or move to a shorter period? What exactly is it? Could you formulate the question very exactly?
I don't know if we can short the period at this time, but there are people that thought that this should be extended. That was what was raised in the discussion group that preceded our working group, that some people believe that should go for more years or forever. And the question is whether we should extend, but we could include whether we believe it could be shortened or made unnecessary for TLD that haven't passed for that yet. But I don't know if it should have an effect. So the discussion group question was to extend. But that's...
I'm sorry. Yeah. So what specifically is the question, whether it should be 2 years or longer? Or what is the question, actually, that we're polling on? I'm just not clear on that.
The polling question is 2 years or longer. But if someone believes that we should look into shorter, then we need a third option at saying shorten the period or remove this requirement altogether. So the current two options are just leave as it is or make it longer than 2 years. And now we go to Alan. Please go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. I was unfortunately called away for part of this call. Do we have statistics on how many times we've had this occur so far? It's hard to say 2 years is enough or too short. You know, if there have been zero occurrences so far with all of the TLDs that we have deployed so far that have the potential for this, that's a different answer than if we've had, you know, one a week.
Thanks, Alan. Actually, the previous slides were actually discussing the statistics we got in the later weeks for that, but the summary is that there were no life-threatening collisions.
Uh-huh.
So the 2 hours response time was never required from any registry, and no life-threatening collisions that were reported. There were 37 that were reported, 34 that had some meaningful data for us to analyze on, and those 34 requests reports refer to 18 TLDs. That's the ballpark numbers. There's more detail in this slide.
Yeah, no, okay. I see the slides now. I did come in late and then I was called away, so I'm working without full knowledge, but thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Seeing no hands, let's try a green-red exercise. So first we go to option A, would be 2012 UTLDs should have readiness for life-threatening collisions beyond those two-year periods. Is there anyone in favor of that? Hearing none, going once, twice, three, zero takers for option A. So for option B, that current ground TLD should only have the readiness as currently foreseen in the framework. Anyone in favor of that, please use the green mark. we couldn't have five green marks, but we have one more from Dietmar, where his mobile connection can put a green mark. So, but for me, so we have six in favor of option B, and I just need to ask whether someone thinks that we should have a third option, and if someone do have a third option, please raise your hand and present that option. John Evett said 1 year. So we do have a third option saying 1 year. Sarah is typing. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. Every new TLD that comes online is a completely new case. So although we haven't had any occurrences till now of life-threatening ones, that doesn't mean that someone will not invent a new TLD in the next go-around that presents a different situation. So I think it's a reasonably prudent thing to do, to keep a period, and there's not a huge difference you know, between the two, but I think 2 years seems to have been good for now, then I don't see a strong reason for changing it.
Thank you, Alan. I interpret that as support for option B. And
correct.
Cheryl suggests that we poll now for option C, which was presented by John Evett, suggesting that we reduce to 1 year. Supporters for option C for 1 year, please mark themselves green. John suggested we should do a cost differential before voting, but we don't actually take votes in PDPs. But I wondered what John was referring to cost differential. Could you go ahead, John, and explain to us what that cost differential would be for designing? What's the cost of readiness? If the cost is high or not. Let me take my co-chair hat off here and talk a while on this. Usually that kind of, usually every kind of readiness has some cost, because if you have a readiness condition, you need to have people in, that can respond to that. You have standby personnel to respond to that. And this one will probably require standby from officers of the company, since it's a very complicated decision to make. But on the other hand, the matter at hand is usually something that's like most human beings will respond to life-threatening conditions, like, say, you are doing something that putting people's lives in danger. People you usually act, even without superior orders, just because we are humans. So it's probably to be there is a cost line on that, but it's probably not that much, because if someone has this kind of event on its hands, usually have support for taking action that actually saves someone's life. So, also of note is that when a registry gets this report, ICANN already did some analysis on that. So ICANN is pretty convinced at this point there is a life-threatening situation. So someone else already took the time and effort and intelligence to evaluate this condition, and which gives someone further down the line with that information probably not much latitude to respond, because otherwise something very, very bad could happen. But let's move on, since we have some near consensus of this. Someone has something different to discuss or to propose, like Sarah asked. Please say that to the list, and depending on what you said, we can bring back this discussion or not further down the road. If you can move to the next slide, which is slide 9, we go to the discussion of whether to have this kind of readiness for subsequent procedures TLD. Now you're looking for further application windows, rounds, or whatever we end up for subsequent procedures. The options that we seem to have, if someone has a different option, please bring that option ahead, that either subsequent procedure should have the same 2 hours readiness, life-threatening collisions readiness for a number of years, likely 2, like it was in the previous round. Other option would be no need for any such readiness, because if it hasn't happened, it won't happen again in different TLDs. Other option would be to expand or at least modify the coverage of such readiness, not only to life-threatening collisions, but to other collisions, or different kinds of disruptions, and attribute to those, to that cover a different type of service level requirements, like some hours or some days. And we also have some options, like which include a differentiate the responses on, based on type of TLD. So if it's some type of TLD, like IDN TLD, the response is something. If it was a non-IDN TLD, the response is different. Or if it's a brand TLD, or if it's any of those types of TLDs that we're discussing in the main work group. So these are the options that we just outlined now. So before taking any temperature feeling here, does anybody have some further options to suggest to this question? Seeing none, seeing no more typing. Let's go to the options we have. Do we have support for keeping the same 2 hours readiness? Let's for now assume that we are keeping the same length of years. We can later discuss if it is the option chosen the length. But let's assume for now that it's same 2 hours for 2 years readiness. Do we have supporters for this? Anyone that supports, please mark themselves green or make themselves known in the chat. We couldn't have 3 visually explicit green marks. We have a comment in the chat from Dietmar that makes up a good idea. So we have 4. Responding to Anne's question, it would be keeping the same period, but if we choose this option, we can later discounted period. So now go to option B. So people that don't like option B, please remove those green marks or move them to red, as Alan did. We have any supporters for option B for no need for such readiness? Going once, going twice, you only have one supporter for option B. So please clear its options and go to option C, where we could possibly expand the readiness coverage for more conditions and then adjust the SLA. Do we have any supporters for option C? Seeing none, we then move to our wildcard question that does someone believe that this response should be different depending on TLD? This would not be a yes or no question, but if someone believes, please state what kind of differentiation does someone suggest. None, since option A was the one that was hotter in our temperature feeling, let's see if we need to tune in the period. So do we keep the period 2 years as it currently is now? Do we, for subsequent procedures, do we move to 1 year? Do we extend to more years? What are people suggesting? Someone can put a number in the chat, possibly a good way for us to measure that. Or if someone is not in the adult connection, please talk out loud and we will know what's your suggestion. We so far only have two opinions, one for two years, one for 1 year. So it's possibly not something that says much about group opinion, but we do have a rule in our work group of defaulting to current status. So by defaulting to current status, we default to a 2 years option, which is what was made in 2012. So our work track 4 position would be to have this readiness, same readiness as it was in 2012, which then closes our main collision discussions for today, and so we move now to Cheryl for the registry services part of our work track 4 call. Please go ahead, Cheryl. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ruben. Cheryl, for the record, and if you could all move to slide 10 and then through to slide 11. That's where we will begin today. Now, of course, you do need to cast your minds back, which I'm sure you all will be doing. We have, as we have with Neighbours Collision, had useful and interesting discourse on this topic before, both in meetings and in our email list. And so what we're trying to do today is look at, perhaps consolidate, but certainly see if we can review some of the what we think we have captured as straw poll options. Excuse me. Pardon me. So let's look first of all as a small refresher what registry services are all about. We have established, and I'm sure everyone agrees, but if not, let us know in chat, that these are mainly used to collect information to build approved services in registry contacts. They're probably less useful when technical evaluation is done in bulk or not done at all. Undergoing discussions might streamline registry services adoption with free-to-deploy services or services requiring no contract amendment. That's an open question. And there's a possible source of innovation, which of course is a, and I'm ad-libbing here, but I do that, I think we all agree, a primary focal point for new GTLD programs, but we also need to recognise we haven't particularly seen that or not seen that so far. Pause for any comments on that intro slide before we move to the next one, which will be slide 12. This is the first of three straw persons that we want to bring you through and open up for discussion. Excuse me. What I'd like to do is actually take you now through each of these, then come back and have a discussion on them. So that way, if there is any text edit or changes to any one of these three straw persons, we can make a note of that rather than rush down rabbit holes in terms of on-the-fly editorial changes and discussions for editorial changes. So if I can beg your indulgence on that, let's take it along that way. First of all, straw person number one. This one states as follows. Applicants will be allowed but not required to specify additional registry services beyond the base Exhibit A services as defined earlier. And in brackets, DNS zone, publication, who is, EPP, etc. List of previous approved registry services. Pardon me, IDN languages, GPML, BTPBA, etc., to be included by references in AGB, the applicant guidebook, and contract. And when applicants inform additional registry services, these will be evaluated through an RCEP, RSCP, at evaluation time or contracting time at applicant's request. So that's what we have is the first of our straw persons for discussion. Let's move now to slide 13, because I do want to take you through each of these, and look at straw person two. Excuse me. Applicants should provide name and full description of all the registry services to be provided. Descriptions should include both technical and business components of each proposed service and address any potential security or stability concerns. Applicant acknowledges that ICANN may establish two applicant evaluation tracks which will operate separately, one for applicants which propose new registry services and one for applicants which contain only the following pre-approved registry services, and there would be a list of such pre-approved registry services attached to this type of condition. Let's move to slide 14 so that we can look at the third current straw person. Here we go. Applicants will be allowed but not required to specify additional registry services Registry services that can be included at any time and are already approved are IDN registrations, certain additional marketplace rights protection mechanisms that have been identified as, in inverted commas, blocks, and bulk transfer after partial portfolio acquisition, which is BTPPA. If the applicant includes additional registry services, the applicant is to specify whether it wants those services, if it wants those services should be to be evaluated in parallel with the application evaluation during the contract negotiation and execution process or after the contract signing. So there's a specification required there. ICANN will use the RCEP policy and process for evaluation of additional services. Note on timing, additional registry services evaluation should not extend the evaluation process and is likely to extend the contract negotiation process. So if we go now back to the first of those, three straw persons, back on page 12, let's now open up a queue on a discussion regarding straw person number one. Does anyone want to raise anything? We're not polling yet, but raise anything, make any conversation, bring up any discussion points about straw person number one. Happy to take a cue on that. If you're not in the Adobe room, just speak up. Go ahead, Anne.
Yes, thank you, Cheryl. I was waiting to see if somebody else who had not proposed a straw person would want to comment before I did. I probably will go ahead, though, as the advocate for straw person number two and open to reasonable modifications of that, of course, as we discuss this. But, the issue I have with the change in straw person number one is I believe that when registry services are proposed, that's really when the community has the greatest opportunity to comment and provide input in the evaluation, and that we don't know exactly, what impact the new services may have. One of the areas that I notice we mention as and as an intellectual property lawyer, we mention that certain rights protection mechanism blocks will be approved or accepted or whatever. Depending on the nature of those blocks, again, my IP community may love it. Others may say, we think that is different from what the policy development process said. So for those reasons, I really believe that the community should be aware of the new services that are offered, and I certainly don't want to support adoption of any one of these frameworks that discourages proposals for new services, because that is, at the fundamental level of creativity and competition on the internet. So I would not want to, I wouldn't be in favor of anything that takes away from that. Thank you. Cheryl, are you there? And the only reason I mentioned, this is Anne again for the transcript, the only reason I mentioned that was that I think Proposal 3 does have a very limiting effect.
Was, Okay, thank you, and we'll note that again, obviously. Today's exercise is very much a compare and contrast one, so this is all good stuff. Okay, Rubens, over to you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Just like to comment one thing about the cash history services policy, which is the policy that applies to registry service proposed by a registry after becoming a contracted party, that they don't have any input from the community except when ICANN makes a finding that a service can raise a security or stability concern. Not it has a security stability problem, it has a concern, and then the concern has to be evaluated. And then the community suggests about that concern. Those concerns are, and all the situation is studied by an RSTEP panel, and then community has an opportunity to comment on the report of the RSTEP panel. That doesn't mean that we can't go beyond that for proposed TLDs. We can, as a PDP working group, we can look at more factors than are looked into registry process. But there is a reality check we need to make. If an applicant can propose a service after becoming a contracted party, only being subject to community input when a security or stability concern is found, then it's, and we should establish it, different rules for the application process. Most applicants will simply choose, hey, let's just wait until I become a registry, and then I will propose that. So I just want us to caution, as the more we put as rules into the application process, the less disclosures of registry services we have. So the less information we have because we have established a differentiation condition. So we can go there. We are allowed to go there. We are specifying policy for application, and we can, but any hurdles we want to put there. But the effectiveness of those are very limited because the policy that applies after registry becomes a contracted party is simpler than we are proposing here. That's my warning. Thank you.
Rubens, and going back to you briefly, but do keep an eye on the time. Obviously, we can continue our conversation next week, but I would like to actually get to Straw Person 2 as well. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Cheryl. I wanted to just comment with respect to input on new GTLD applications. Although the community doesn't have a, you know, necessarily a formal process for doing that, the fact is that, you know, many of us review the applications, at least we did in 2012, and evaluate and take a look at them, and that there are, you know, more informal methods, and if there's an irregularity that's discovered, that I think there are enough methods within the ICANN system to raise an issue if something is, you know, counter to policy or whatever. I'll try to hurry. I wanted to try to better understand what Rubens had said about that we'd be discouraging. I'm not sure I understood his second point, that we would be discouraging disclosure, I thought I heard him say, and I really just wanted to try to understand that better.
So do you want me to have a go at it?
Thanks, Cheryl. Ruben's here. What I said is that since an applicant becomes a registry and is now a contracted party, the the input that registry needs to get is only from ICANN, where the ICANN thinks that there is a possible security and stability concern, or if a competition concern is found, then ICANN establish a 2-month penalty and informs a competition authority, and that then competition authority can move on or not with the process, but can't stop the process, just a time delay. But when it comes to registry, that's the only 2 times where community is consulted after a security and stability concern is found. So what I said is that if an applicant, knowing that if the applicant specifies a registry service in the application, it will go through more evaluation aspects and more community input and more opinions from the community, then it has to do when it becomes a registry. That's a disincentive for being upfront early on that it will be providing that registry service. Because if it puts that in that application, then it might have any kind of evaluations and something, and we can at this policy development specify any evaluations. We don't have to stick to registry services policy. We can go beyond that. What I'm cautioning is just what the real value of that, because otherwise people simply wouldn't put anything different in their applications. You just say, you provide plain vanilla registry services, and after signing a contract, then they will file an asset. That was what I always mentioned as just being pragmatic. Thank you.
Thank you, Reuben. Share off the record. I think that's clear to me. But let me get back to Anne and check. Anne, are you seeing where Reuben's risk assessment?
Yes, I'm not positive that I agree, but I understand it now. Thank you.
God, I wasn't seeking mutuality, just to know that your question had been clarified, that's all. I shouldn't use those terms, clarifying questions. I find they give me a shiver. I shall avoid that for a while until another meeting. Sorry, a little humorous aside for the in crowd at this meeting. What I'm going to propose now is the following. I am going to have it send the remainder slides, so this will be slide 12, slide 13, slide 14, and most importantly slide 15, which is one that looks at a comparison, pointing out, for example, that the there are similarities between straw person 1 and straw person 3, etc., etc. I'm going to send those to our list. I'm going to ask the list to consider and discuss on list these 3 straw persons and the compare and contrast exercise, including the slide 16, which is a decision matrix that may help some people's thinking. And we will take up this conversation at this point in the agenda at our next meeting, and our next meeting is only next week. Remember, we had a postponement of last week's meeting, so we have 2 meetings following each other. So hopefully a week apart, we're not going to lose our thread here, and that we will be able to perhaps further and garner some more opinion off our list. So our next meeting for Work Track 4 is on the 12th of October at 0300 UTC. one of my favorite times to have a meeting, she says, groaning, not too quietly. I also wanted to mention to you, and Terry's putting it into the chat, and she will have the right of it, I can assure you. I also wanted to mention to you that the next plenary call of the PDP Working Group is on October 9th, so that is before our next call, October 9th at 1500 UTC. And obviously we would like to, we will be giving an update at that meeting, but we'd like to see all of you and many more in that plenary call as well. Should note apologies from both Jeff and Avery for today's call. They're both otherwise occupied with other teleconferences today, but they figured that Rubens and I could probably manage to struggle through the 60 minutes. And with us coming to the top of the hour and wanting to value all of your volunteer time, I want to thank all of you, all of the staff, and hope that the action item I've outlined for us to take these few slides to the list and prepare ourselves to continue with this conversation at our next call next week is a satisfactory one. And we can then stop the recording and say bye for now.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining.